Hi, I'm Jamin Brazil, and you're listening to the Happy Market Research Podcast. Today, my guest is Dinah Bowen, President of Market Research at Cervata. Cervata offers a technology platform that informs business decisions used by today's top brands, including GameStop, Clorox, Gartner, and Disney, my favorite brand of all time. Dinah is a serial entrepreneur who has worked in all aspects of the marketing research space. Dinah, thank you very much for joining me today on Happy Market Research Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Jamin. I would say that I am a happy market researcher.
I love it.
It's a very smiley, happy market researcher, so I'm glad to be here.
We all are. We all are, as long as we're making payroll. What we found is our audience is really interested about what Cervata is doing today, how you're specifically fitting in. But what I'm really digging is the background of what got you here. So could you tell us a little bit about what it is that your parents do and how that's informed what you're doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my dad was an auto broker and he was in the car industry. And so he is a very dynamic salesperson. He is your quintessential car guy. And I grew up with him owning his own business, so also an entrepreneur. And what he did was he bought fleets of rental cars from Hawaii and then sold them as used cars all over the mainland.
Wow.
And so for me, I got to travel with him, which going on a business trip to Hawaii is like how I thought business got done when I was growing up, a little spoiled. Now I look back and I'm like, wow, that I was really fortunate. But I would get to travel with my dad when I was on school breaks and sit in on business dinners that he was having. And just a lot of it was just observing the way that he did business in the Pacific Rim. And my mom was a teacher and an educator, so my parents were always very supportive of education.
The sales side of things that your dad had, right? That sounds like it fed directly into, obviously, your marketing background. Did he use TV, radio, etc., or was he more network-based distribution?
He was more network-based distribution. I would say we're very similar in that we are very just social animals, both of us are. We like to talk to people, we like to network, we like to build relationships. And that to me, whether it's in Cervata or in the market research industry, that's what I enjoy most. It's, you know, we all spend a lot of time at work. My daughter will sometimes call me a workaholic, but it's because I love my job. And I want that to be an example to her that you can be a professional and love what you do. And it's about the people that you spend your time with every day. And, you know, life is short and we spend a lot of time at work. So if you can surround yourself by wonderful people and partners and colleagues that support you and you support, then I think that's a pretty good life.
Yeah. No more Mondays, right? So I had a conversation with John Dumas of Entrepreneur on Fire, is like one of my aspirational podcasters. He's got about a million listeners is what I meant by that. Anyway, he said, Jamin, every day for me is Saturday. And yeah. I'm like, that's right. I mean, you know, literally, like I woke up this morning early. I couldn't wait to get in the car, come down here, meet you face to face and have the conversation. It's just like when you love what you do and the people you do it with, it makes all the difference.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Saturday is my like most energetic work day of the week, which sounds really strange, but I go to the gym and I'm on the elliptical catching up on everything that didn't happen during the week. And it's my catch up. So I'll tell my team, don't feel compelled to respond. I am getting back to you.
Totally.
But I think it's the time where I think the most about social media posts and blog posts and just, I don't know. I think it's because you get a little bit of space for yourself and, and my mind goes to business a lot of times, but in a fun way.
Do you think that the Saturday morning, I'm going to call it 3 hours. Do you think that it could be more, it could be less, but like 3 hours of work that invests, that has a bigger lever of what you get done in the week? Like, do you think that 3 hours actually equals a whole day?
It sometimes in terms of just quiet, get things done work and thought time. Absolutely. I also think that my observation is that I'm not unusual in that regard. I actually think that certainly in the market research industry, a lot of executives use that time because you're used to getting up early anyway.
Yeah, totally.
And so you're up. And so your family's still sleeping in or doing their thing. And it kind of gives you that quiet time in the morning with your coffee that's not a regular workday to do that. And so it's pretty common, actually. And I'll out Kristen Luck, but Kristen Luck and I sometimes will be late night on a Saturday or a Friday night. And I'm like, look at us emailing right now.
Winning.
Yeah, I don't know, not trying to set an example there at all, but you know those Friday nights that you have on occasion. Hopefully not every Friday night.
I do. Yeah. Kristen and I have had, she's like my work wife, so to speak, right? Everybody's always said that over in the industry, and we're not two sides of the same coin. We're literally the same side of the same coin. And so, yes, we absolutely
have those Friday nights. Yeah. And work wife and work husband.
Yeah,
yes,
it's a different thing.
Several of those, I think, in my past.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your academic background. Nursing, super interesting. Yeah. How is the healthcare? So you were originally obviously going into nursing.
So I started out going into nursing. I will have to tell you, self-admitted, I am not the most nurturing person. Like if someone says I need a Band-Aid in my family, I'm like, get it yourself. You know, they're love like, but it. I'm bleeding. I'm like, well, then stop it. You know,
apply pressure and get it yourself.
While I think of myself as a nurturing business mentor, maybe not so much on the healthcare side. Mm-hmm. So I decided to pivot and go into business. But you asked about my parents earlier. I grew up with a dad that said, hey, you should grow up to be a teacher or a nurse, right? And that sounds a little old school Archie Bunker,
yep,
I think. But he wasn't saying it because he was trying to restrict my choices as a woman. It was because he thought that that would be a successful path for me, right? But I didn't want to be a teacher or a nurse. And so I went into healthcare, and what I really loved was business.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is when I transferred over to the business healthcare program, the business school at Oregon State was sponsored by Hewlett Packard, and we had state-of-the-art technology. Our technology was all of the newest stuff that the business world didn't even have yet. So as a function of the time and space that I was in, when I came out of school, I had technology skills that were beyond, in terms of using the software and the hardware, beyond what was in the business world. And so I went that direction. I took healthcare and went into healthcare technology.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how much of that, because you were able to see maybe a year to maybe even three or five in some cases, because I know, especially in medical kind of like education, it's not like they're on the cutting edge of technology usually, right? They're usually using older stuff.
That's right.
And so having that view, did it enable you to identify gaps in ways that they could do things better using technology or more modern technology?
It, I think I hit the job force at a time where everything was still moving from, you know, in some cases I would be doing code into a green screen to put networks in place for hospitals. And everything was moving to Windows interfaces.
Yep.
And so I was going in replacing systems in hospitals with Windows interfaces and making it easier for people. But that was new to that world.
Right, totally.
It was something I'd been doing for years as in school, right? And so I came out as, you know, at that time, I was a young woman. I chose technology. Nobody was really doing that.
Right.
Most of the people I work with were older IT guys.
Yep.
Fantastic mentors, by the way. But I was just very different than that. And here I am, fresh out of school, first person in the company I work for to get a laptop, right? To use in the field. Like at that time, if you remember back, late 90s, there were still computer consoles in businesses that everybody shared.
Yep.
Printers that everybody shared.
Totally.
Right. And so I today I think about all, you know, Google Women in Coding, and it's a thing now to be a female engineer in Silicon Valley. And I'm not an engineer, but just there's so much more for women in terms of supporting them in technology today. And at the time, I was just trying to figure it out because it would just happen to be something I was interested in. So,
and I think everybody in those days, like those super early days, were just trying to figure it out. There was the application of technology, as I reflect on the 90s and then 2000s and then really the last decade too, that we're getting ready to close soon. it feels like it was very unstructured, right? And then all of a sudden in, I want to say, 99, you know, XML formats came out for market research data structures that actually informed us as an industry of how a single select or multi-select question should be coded digitally, right? And so you see this like structure that keeps getting narrower and narrower, which is one of the reasons that I think, you know, Wire, and I know that you're involved with Wire, Kristen Luck's organization, gosh, it's turning into a podcast about Kristen Luck, is so important, is because I think as things get narrower and narrower, we need to make sure that we're more and more inclusive. And as we continually see in the data, the more diverse teams are, the higher the probabilities of success and the greater the outcomes. All right. So let's shift gears a little bit.
Okay.
If you were a young professional wanting to get a job at Cervata or another insights-based organization, whether it's a brand or agency side, what are some of the steps that you would take in order to secure your job?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting. I think about just because I just did get a new job at Cervata, it's very real, right? It's real for me and it's real for young people. I think I've done 3 interviews for Cervata for young people coming out of school. And so I would say for any of us looking for a job, people will always say networking, but networking is really important and fostering relationships. As it relates to young people coming out of school, number one for me is attitude. Mm. Just a good attitude. You can bring somebody with a good attitude in the room and it lifts everyone in the room up. And if you have somebody that has not so good of an attitude, it brings everyone in the room down. And I like things to be up. I like upbeat. You know, we have hard days, but attitude is how you get through those hard days. And so attitude is by far number one. Number two for me is willingness to get in there and roll up your sleeves and be part of the solution. And so stylistically as a leader, I'm a roll up your sleeves leader. Mm. I'm a player coach operator. And it's because that's what I like to do. Right. And I like to get in there and be part of the team and co-sale and work together and do things together. And so I look for team members that come on board to Cervata that want to be part of that. And I would say the thing that is like fingernails on a chalkboard to me when I'm talking to candidates or even people young in their career is, well, that wasn't in my job description. And when I hear that, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know if this is going to work, because I think back to the job description I had at Market Tools when it was a startup, and it was like, wasn't in my job description. I came on board to be an implementation manager. I moved out to General Mills to run a remote team. I was kind of a client service person at that point / implementation manager that went on to lead sales, that went on to start the central region for Market Tools. And all of those things built my career in market research, and none of those things were in my job description.
Right.
None of them.
Right.
Not one. And so I, you know, and the thing too, I would say is someday it's your job to be a C-level executive, and other days it's your job to just help take out the garbage.
Right.
Right. Like if you're an entrepreneur, you're the janitor and the CEO and everything in between.
100%.
Right. And so it's really about not feeling entitled, like, oh, I just got this degree, so I don't do that, right? It's like we all do that, whatever that is, to get through the day,
right,
to work together, to have a team culture. And so I would say that for me, it's the attitude, but it's just willingness to jump in. And I love people that make mistakes of action. It's the inaction when you do nothing. It's like something clearly needed to be done, but you did nothing, right? If you do something and the client or your team member sees that you're trying, you might not be perfect, you might not be all the way there yet, but you're trying. And so anybody that I see that's trying, that's rolling up their sleeves and getting in there, is somebody who I want on my team.
So there's so much to talk about.
A lot there.
I want to hone in on 2 things. Attitude. You've got to bring it to the table. Like if you're the kind of personality where when you come in, you're looking at receiving, it's going to be tough. But if you enter into a conversation, or when you show up to work on a Monday morning, even if you're out late Sunday night, you need to expect that you're giving the energy to the room, right? That is huge, the impact. The other thing I really want to hone in on is, as you went through the, I'll call it the accidental job promotions of market tools, mm-hmm. and I don't mean that in a, you see what
it's
I'm saying?
It's absolutely true. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Not only did you not say my job description's changed or that have, you probably, and I'm hypothesizing here, so if I'm wrong, please correct me. It would be a normal course in the show. You probably weren't also saying, hey, I need to get paid more money.
I was, you know, I've talked to even some folks on my team about this recently. It's an interesting conversation, the conversations of titles and the conversation of money, right?
Right.
Because they're just practical realities.
Totally.
Right? They're practical realities of your cost of living, of, you know, mm-hmm. paying the bills and things. They're practical realities of how people view you inside and outside the industry. You know, it's just our culture. But most of the jobs that I've done, I was already doing the job before I got the title and before I got the raise and before I got the commission check and whatever, right? It was like, oh yeah, I deserve that, you know, but it was, the things to get to that point were already happening. And I think that as a young person coming out of school, I think that's just a misnomer mm-hmm. that all of us as leaders need to help mentor people on, which is, hey, it's not like you get the promotion and then you level up your game.
Right.
Right? Like, oh, when I get the promotion, now I'm going to act more like an executive or now I'm going to act more like a manager. No. You're doing those things already. And when somebody sees that in you, you're like, yeah, I want that person to be in charge and I want them to have the title and have the appropriate salary
totally.
For that role. And you're happy to give it to them because you're like, you deserve it.
100%.
And you're rooting for them. And I can, you know, with Wire or even with any of my mentees, whether they're through Wire or not through Wire or just people on my team, you can start to see the signs of people that you know are on the C track.
Yep.
You know, you can just look at that and be like, oh, I'm betting on that person. I'm betting on them and I'm betting on them too.
Totally.
You know, and it's fun. And I would say, I know I mentioned Wire, but I would say that that's true of women and men. And that's really important to me to kind of call that out is I'm an equal opportunity mentor and I've mentored both women and men throughout my career. And it's true for both
yeah.
attitude and, you know, doing the job before you get the title.
So we've talked a lot about the values you have with the characteristics. Do you look at LinkedIn? Is a resume important?
I feel like I should say yes. But no, it's not. I am an in-person person.
Totally. So, but let me back up. How do they get the interview? Like, are you interviewing everybody that applies?
Actually, at Cervata, the people that we're interviewing right now are my managers are
okay.
putting them forward. So,
they've already done all that work.
Already doing some of that work. And so I will say on the LinkedIn comment, yes, LinkedIn is important to me. I think that being mindful of your public persona is important in this day and age. And as you know, I call it public is the new private. Like
if you don't
have a picture of yourself on LinkedIn,
right.
what's wrong with you? It's like, they're shady. Like, why don't they have a photo, right? You've got more people, you know, mm-hmm. more privacy when people see, oh, that's who that person is.
Totally.
Right? So there's a little bit of that, but I think it's important to, we're in market research. It's a function of marketing. And the person and the thing that you should care about marketing the most is yourself.
Right.
If you're looking for a job, especially, right?
And totally.
So at Cervata, something that we're working on, and I won't go too much into detail on this because it'll be a little bit of our secret sauce, but is we're working on a social selling strategy.
Nice.
And so you'll see more of that over the coming months. But it's, you guys know me that I like to social sell and it's part of connecting to people beyond San Francisco.
Totally.
And across the world. But also for my team of young people that are new to their careers or anyone who's mm-hmm. in their careers, it's how do we lift each other up? And so it's about, hey, it's your turn to write the blog post this month. And it's about creating thought leadership. It's about using our networks to raise each other up, right? And so LinkedIn's important. And people on my team have been cleaning up their LinkedIns and their Twitter because they know that this thing's coming, right?
That's
and
good.
So yes, LinkedIn is an important part of looking for a job and that right out of school you should be. We had a intern this summer from Duke University, and her LinkedIn, I would have loved to have that LinkedIn coming out of college, but you know, her last day at Cervata, I was like, the number one thing you need to do today is send everyone in this company a recommendation request to write you a recommendation, because you're going to come out of Duke with an internship at a Silicon Valley startup with these people that have loved all the great things you did for us this summer. Like, you know, if you're in school and you're doing internships, start building that up.
Oh, I love that. It's so important. So, because I'm old, you're not, but I'm old.
Thank you. That's generous of you.
After 20 years of working in this industry, you know, leaving Focus Vision as the CEO in September of last year and then kind of stepping into this, I didn't know exactly what. I looked at my network and I'm like, oh, wow, I know the CEO of this company and the CMO of this company and so on and so, and you know, CPO and so on and so forth. I'm like, that's so weird, because I remember when we were bootstrapping 18 years ago, you know, they were a project manager at Holland Partners.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yes, I do.
And then as time progresses, those relationships that you build when you're literally in the trenches on Christmas Eve trying to solve the problem, that pays forward. It's like compounded interest on steroids.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. I believe that. I talk a lot about the market tools mafia, mm-hmm. because...
Oh, yes. This is great. I didn't interrupt you. This is a great point.
I talk a lot about mafias in general, in a good way, mm-hmm. right? But so the market tools mafia, and everyone that's listening to this that worked with me at market tools mm-hmm. knows this, is near and dear to my heart. And that team of people we built... I was there for 12 years. Mm-hmm. So I worked with, I think, all of the best leaders that I know in the industry that went on to different things were at that company at one point in time. And so, you know, as I think about that, there's a strong network that supports each other, that recommends each other's for jobs, that has networks. I'm having lunch with someone tomorrow that was a market tools mafia. They're mm-hmm. in all the different companies in the industry, sample, technology, research. And so it's about going through the trenches with somebody. Totally. And you see this in any business where you're building something together. You become family mm-hmm. and you have good times and bad times, but whatever they are, they all make you stronger and connect you. We do that as people, right? I think that's why people in the military are so tight.
Absolutely.
Right? And you see that. And so you see that in the military, you see that in work environments when people are starting companies. And so, but there's other mafias out there, right? There's the Decipher Mafia.
Yeah,
there's the
true.
Greenfield Mafia. There's the Research Now Mafia. You know, you think about all these companies that were being built as online research emerged. And then I get to watch all these people that have gone on to build their own companies who are sort of, you know, managers or directors or, you know, tier two executives that yep. have all said, hey, I want to go out and build something and take a shot at it. And, you know, no matter what that outcome looks like, you're rooting for that person who's just going out there and taking a shot at it. And
totally.
So anyway, I've kind of digressed on that,
but
that network is also a LinkedIn network.
Absolutely. And it starts on day one when you walk into the room, which is why it's so important that people give energy and not take it, because how you behave when you're 23 or 4 and you know, getting paid is how you will be perceived in 20 years later.
And the Cervata team is that energy right now.
You get it
now.
When you walk in.
So that, you know, we're in the middle of a build. There's the team that was early on that just rock and rolled through Series A, right? And then I get to come on board at this really exciting time of just closing Series B and help grow the business at this time. And so we're in the middle of another one of those things, and I just love that feeling. Mm. And I look at everyone on the team and I think back, oh, I remember when I was at that level at Market Tools,
right?
And
totally.
It was pre-married, yep. pre-babies, yep. pre, you know, manager, director level title, C-level title, all of that. And we were all entrepreneurs. And I look at this team and I'm like, this is so exciting. You don't even know what you're in for.
I know.
Like, fasten your seatbelt.
And that is the best part of age. We were talking, probably the best skill that I have is pattern recognition.
Yes.
You know? And that's why, anyway, so it's great. And then what's going to happen, because you know that there's like these floodgates of cash in, and I was around in the 90s. I lived through the dot-com crash, you know, with my company.
Yeah.
That's going to happen again at some point. That
yep.
will happen. And we know how to react.
Yes.
It's totally different. right?
Yeah.
You don't have to go through it the first time.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was reflecting on the first.com bust mm-hmm. and market tools, because I think one of the questions that you guys had sent me was about SurveyMonkey,
yeah.
right? And so I think back to all, like, SurveyMonkey and what happened between market tools and SurveyMonkey, right? It's like a Harvard Business Review case. Like, some of it is just classic stuff. But when you're in the middle of it, you know, it's really hard to see the forest through the trees, right?
You can't.
And so market tools, you know, we were the first online survey platform, and that was Zoomerang DIY, won lots of awards for that in the year 2000.
And Zoomerang closed, if I remember correctly, like in around 99, over $20 million in funding, I think. It was a big, big round in those days.
In those days,
yeah,
right? It was the high-flying days.
And I mean, definitely the dominant just for the audience, because maybe a lot of them don't know, but they were the dominant force in the DIY survey platform.
That's right.
Right? They were the Yahoo of...
Yeah. Right. And my job, actually, when I came on board, similar timing to the timing of coming on board to Cervata, at that time, I came on board as an implementation manager because of the network experience.
Yep.
And so I was the implementation manager for Zteligence, which was the enterprise platform. There were no DIY consumer platforms. Zoomerang was that. And there were no enterprise platforms. And I think ConfirmIt was getting started around the same time. And actually, we saw ConfirmIt as more of a direct competitor to us at that time than SurveyMonkey.
Right.
SurveyMonkey didn't even get started till 2004.
That's right.
I was 4 years into moving from San Francisco to Minneapolis to take on running the General Mills account. And they started in Wisconsin above a record store. Like, today we think of them as Palo Alto, Silicon Valley, and all that it is now, but they were not a threat at all. It was a classic, you know, you don't think they're a threat until it's
totally.
Too late,
yep.
right? And so that was 2004, and we thought that they were going to go under. They didn't even really get going until 2006 and get momentum. And so by the time we realized they were a threat, they had too much momentum already, unstoppable momentum. And so we actually focused on building capabilities that they didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to just this race to be the same, we focused on what are the key things that we can be different. And in the end, those were the things that SurveyMonkey ended up acquiring.
Right.
And also just the user base and everything else.
Yeah, the panel assets.
And the Zoom panel, which we built the Zoom panel, originally with General Mills. And then that went on to be our big consumer panel asset.
Yeah, such an interesting story. They had, I think one of the things that stood out to me as they entered first in 2004, it felt very copycat. And then, no offense to SurveyMonkey people, because I love them very much, but in that point, I'm like, gosh, really? It just felt like the same thing.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, about 2 years later, it felt like their marketing just, I don't know if they got funding or what happened, but it felt like...
Dave came on board. And he came on board, and it was a game changer, I think, for them at that point. And they focused on DIY. They focused on the long tail. We were at Market Tools. We pivoted to survive the .com boom.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Yep.
That's what changed things. We had to do that to survive.
Totally.
And so it's just sort of, should we have focused more on Zoomerang? Maybe, but would we have been around to talk about it? Don't know.
Right.
So we pivoted into the panel. We pivoted into full service research.
Yep.
We focused on big brands and enterprise.
Yep.
And they focused on that long tail of DIY.
That's all they cared
about. So, you know, in the end, that was what ended up driving, you know, the valuation of the sale of Zoomerang to SurveyMonkey.
Yeah. And congratulations to SurveyMonkey, because as you know, they recently filed their S-1. And
yes, I heard that.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Kind of a big deal. It'd be interesting. I'm watching them like white knuckle just to see what's going to wind up happening with the valuations. I'm excited for them. They're going to do well. So let's shift gears. Cervata right now.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Series B. It's a really, really big deal. What is Cervata doing that's got you most excited and is getting purchase among your customers?
Yeah. So Cervata is so exciting to me, because I think I was so in the mobile kind of blinders on that it was all I was thinking about. And when that wrapped up and that chapter closed, I started looking around realizing and really observing what was happening in the industry and thinking, you know, mobile is an important part to a research business, but it's one piece. Mm. Online is one piece. Mobile is one piece. They're component parts to a much larger thing that's going on of data collection and reaching consumers. So as I look at Cervata's assets, the thing that's really cool is our publisher network. So Cervata has two business lines, the market research business line, which I'm responsible for, and the ad measurement business line. And thinking about how market research can apply ad measurement types of functionality and capabilities to market research is very exciting to me. So I'll use an example of TrueSample. Mm-hmm. If we think about TrueSample, when we created that company, we weren't inventing validating who people were. We were just inventing it in the market research industry.
Right.
So the team looked towards the credit scoring industry, right? And it was a team that built TrueSample. So my colleagues that were a part of that. And it was, how do people validate credit scores today? And how do we take that concept and apply it to validating people that are taking surveys are real and unique? So that was take from one industry, apply to another, and have new applications of how you can use. So as I think about Cervata and market research and ad measurement, Cervata started with market research, and we have a survey platform. It's a really cool one. It's device agnostic.
Nice.
And it's easy to use, very simple. But what the secret sauce to that is that it plugs into our publisher network. And that is, for all intents and purposes, our sample source. It's our audience. It's not a panel, but it's access through publisher networks to what I call net new sample. So part of the challenge with panels is that, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent. Like I love panels and they have a purpose, right? And we use panels on part of our business. But there, a lot of times you're talking to the same people that have been part of a panel for a long time. The people that we access through our publisher network are not on panels. The way that we incentivize people is we unlock premium content. Mm. So they don't get points. They don't get gift cards or rewards. We unlock Wi-Fi. We unlock Wall Street Journal articles. And so, you know, when you're on LinkedIn and so you click on an article and then it wants you to subscribe and you think, oh, I don't want to pull out my credit card right now.
Right.
I'm not going to read it. Or, oh, answer 6 questions, answer 10 questions, get it for free. I'll do that. And so while we may not be part of a panel, we are willing to do that to get access to that service or that article or that app game, whatever it is. And so we have a unique way of reaching audience, and we also have a massive scale in the way that we can do that across the web. So our respondents are not your typical panel respondent, but we've got a lot of them. We've got them across all devices, and we've got national rep sample going out the door. We don't have to weight it or balance it. You just
Let's go.
So our survey platform is connected to our survey wall. And when people do surveys with us, they go out to the publisher network. And you can do that in a DIY capacity. You can go on to our platform. You can set up your survey. You can launch that survey. And it gets sent out to the publisher network. And then you get your online results.
Very unique. You know, in terms of how you're accessing the completes, right?
Correct.
If I'm a user on the platform, that's very powerful. You obviously define the sample frame after you, or at some point during your project creation.
Right up front.
Right,
yeah.
Up front.
You just click, you know, age, gender, you know, you set your parameters, and then you just say, how many people do I want? Do I want 200? Do I want 500? And then drag and drop, set up your survey, and boom, launch.
So the unique selling proposition here is really centric to the quality sample that they're able to use on the Cervata platform?
That's right. Yeah. So we've done some research on research comparisons.
Sure.
Between traditional online panels and our publisher network. And the thing that you don't see on the publisher network is fraud, because there's no incentive. So you don't see duplicate survey takers. You don't see people lying and biasing the data to get through a screener, because you can't stockpile free Wi-Fi. You can't exchange free Wi-Fi for cash or gift cards. And so there's no incentive. It's hard to do because of the way that we deliver the surveys to begin with. But then on top of that, there's no incentive to lie through the screeners, because you're not trying to game it in any way.
Got it. Super interesting.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that white paper. Maybe we'll include
that
in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I can share some information with you on that.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah.
My guest today has been Dinah with Cervata. Dinah, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.